I'm Health Coach Heather, and you are listening to episode 87, Uplevel Your Parenting Tactics with Debbie Godfrey. Welcome to the Healthy Families Rule podcast. This podcast is a resource for families who are on a path to optimal wellness, but still aren't able to reach their physical and mental goals. I'm Heather Mitchell, and with over 9 years' experience in nutrition and exercise and a certified master health coach, I'm uniquely qualified to help you and your family achieve optimal health. So for the next few minutes, set aside your concerns and learn how you can self-repair your body and mind and experience greater joy in your life. Please note that the info provided in the show is intended to educate and elevate, but it's not meant to be a substitute for advice from your medical provider. Okay, you guys, today I'm here with Debbie Godfrey, and she is the world's positive parenting teacher. I'm really excited to have her here. She's got incredible credentials here, Debbie. You're a certified parent educator, and you have over 30 years expertise in the parenting education field. It also looks like you've been into some schools teaching this positive parenting style and throughout your community. And not only that, but all over the world as well. It sounds like you've been in India and China. Is this correct?
Yes, it is.
Oh my goodness. I'm looking at your biography, and you just have so much here. It sounds like you bring a lot of experience to the table. And this is perfect for my listeners, because most of my listeners are moms with these school-aged kids, and we're trying to really figure out how to be the best parents we can be for these kids. And we mess up, don't we? We're not perfect. We're going to mess up. But positive parenting, can you tell us what positive parenting is? What is this?
Well, I still feel like positive parenting is really a verb, you know, it's something that you do. And I think there's as many ways to define it as different people that teach it, right? And so for me, it's a way of disciplining that builds a child's self-esteem while at the same time correcting the misbehavior. So the old forms of discipline, which what I would call negative discipline, would damage their self-esteem. So spanking, yelling, hitting, grounding, all the very coercive forms of discipline that are associated in research with negative outcomes for children. Those forms of discipline may have corrected the misbehavior, but it always damaged their self-esteem. And there's that old term of breaking their spirit. And so to me, the true essence of positive parenting is to raise and discipline our children in a way that doesn't break their spirit, so that we can nurture them, build their self-esteem, yet still make sure that they learn proper ways to be, you know, and kind of semi-follow the rules, and that we can all get along, and that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and being responsible and respectful and all those sorts of things. So it's much more work typically than the old forms of discipline. It's super easy to yell at them or spank at them.
Right.
It's much more work and thought and forethought to come up with a solution that not only corrects the misbehavior, but also enhances their self-esteem.
Okay. And I want to talk about some of those ways, but I got to say, I'm on board 100%. I love this positive parenting theory, but a lot of my family and friends still use methods like spanking and, you know, because that gets the result they're looking for. It does produce some fear into the child to where they're not going to do that behavior again, especially when you have a strong-willed child and you don't want to break their spirit, but you also kind of want to break them into better habits. Do you know what I mean? And so this is a really tough one for parents to figure out what way will work for this strong-willed child. Do you have anything to say on that?
Yeah. I mean, so most parents of those strong-willed children will tell you that they have to get more and stronger and stricter in order to get what they think is the result. Whereas the opposite often happens. Most of those kids actually do better in a more positive environment. And the problem is a lot of people mistake positive parenting with doing nothing. Like, oh, let's just like have a free for all and let them do whatever they want. And you know, they're just going to run amok. And that's the mistaken perception, I think, that gives positive parenting a bad name, or that causes those people that feel like they need to be super strict to shy away from it. Whereas, like I said, for me, implementing positive parenting tools and ideas actually takes way more work and thought. And I call it being relentless with love. So my kids just know that if I walk in and I've got the whole positive parenting look, and they're just like, oh, just give it to her, do whatever, you know, like they know I'm going to come in, I'm going to smile, I'm going to rub their back, I'm going to be all, you know, But I'm tenacious. Like, I'm not going to go away until they do what they're supposed to do. But I'm not doing it by hitting them. I'm doing it by standing there and smiling and rubbing their back. And, you know, I'm winning their cooperation over with love rather than fear. And I just want to pick up on what you said, Heather, about the fear. People mistakenly think that we need to instill fear in our children in order to get them to behave or to do better. And it's such a mistake, because as soon as you engage a child using fear-based discipline, what it does is it shuts down all of their thinking brain, their cognitive brain. Mm-hmm. So what they go into is the typical fight, flight, or flee, and they don't, or freeze, and they don't have the thinking happening about, why should I be responsible? Why should I be respectful? What should I do that is helpful in this situation? All they're thinking is, how do I get away from him or her? He's going to hit me. I'm going to get yelled at. I got to hide from, you know, I got to hide my mistakes. I mean, there's all this, the fear-based responses are not what we're looking for. That's not what those parents are looking for, but they mistake and believe that that's the way to get them. And so we want to keep our kids out of fear when we're disciplining them, so that they can use their thought processes in order to function and do what they're supposed to do. And they can do it. And we don't give them nearly enough credit. And I spend a lot of time in my classes teaching parents how to ask questions rather than telling your kids what to do all day, because that's going to lead them to be thinking people, is when you ask questions that cause them to go, huh, I don't know about that. And instead of when we just say, you know, go to your room, do this, do that, then all they do is fight against us, right? Because we're bossing them around.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a hard one for a lot of us, because I have a strong-willed child and I want him to get certain things done, but I feel like I'm so controlling sometimes to make that happen. And he needs more, what I've learned from this child is he needs more freedom to be independent and feel like he has more power, or he will butt up against me. And this is the struggle with parents, is we've always been taught that's disrespectful. You're being disrespectful. Like, there's that one word that keeps coming to our head that our parents told us over and over, that you do what you respect your parents and your teachers and your leaders or whatever, and you do as you're asked. And if you don't, I mean, that's being disrespectful. What do you say to the word disrespectful, and how can parents overcome this feeling of, they're not respecting me, therefore I have to put in some control here in a way that might be really demeaning to the child?
Well, I would usually, it's obviously going to be individual, but most of the time that child's disrespect, where do you think it comes from? Like, how do you think children learn respect? How do they learn respect? I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
But how from us? Is it from us saying, you better respect me?
Right. It's not. It's so weird that we mirror their behavior and expect them to treat us with all this respect when we don't come at them with respect.
Thank you. Yes. So that's, I mean, from a small age, we need to give children respect. Children cannot exude equality until they've received it. So by giving our children respect, like, there's so many simple ways to do this, to respect their, like, especially your kids' age, to knock on their doors when we're going into their room. It's not that we don't own the house. Of course we own the house. Of course we have a right to be in there. But this is a small way that we have an opportunity to show our children respect. And then once they feel the feeling of being respected, they can then send that to other people. But if they've constantly been disrespected themselves by the way that they've been parented, you know, bossed around, told what to do, not given any chance to be responsible or respectful, they aren't going to do that. They're going to model, they're going to see, okay, the big guy with the power has all the power and I want that. So I've got to be mean and bully other people around or fight in order to be powerful. So it's a mistake to think that that's how we get that result. And so by giving them that respect, they can then give it back. And this is the finesse of being a parent too, because yes, I understand, like, I'm the parent and I want them to respect me, but I have to go about it with finesse or else it's not going to happen. You know, the power struggles are just going to get worse. And I love what you said about your child, that you've observed, if you give him some space and you give him some freedom, he'll do the right thing. And that's what we have to know about our kids, that all of them have a path to doing the right thing. And we've got to nurture each of their own personalities in ways that they are. Some kids need super tons of structure in order to be successful. Some kids need a lot of flexibility. You have to learn what your child thrives in and provide it lovingly. We call it kindly and firmly. So with love and limits, those two things in balance.
Love and limits. I like that. So if we need our child to do something, their homework or clean their room, and they're giving us a ton of attitude about it, like, is there a tool you can give us that would help us to have the child actually cooperate with us?
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorites is it's nonverbal. So what I do is if I, like, let's say, okay, you say the homework. So is he in the kitchen? Is he sitting at the table?
Yeah. The kitchen table.
Okay. And you, what are you saying? Do your homework and he's just ignoring you, or what is he doing?
Well, they walk in the door, let's say this, and then, and they want to just watch TV and get on computers and do all this stuff. And I usually say something like, look, when your homework's done, then you can. It's a when then type of scenario, you know, but right, even with that beautiful scenario, I still get like some pushback of, ah, I don't want to do that. And this says, this isn't fair. And you didn't make her the other day. And it just turns into this big thing, you know?
Right. So let me ask you this. If you've been out at work for 8 hours all day long, do you mm-hmm. want to come home and walk in the door and like start doing more work?
No, I absolutely don't.
So first of all, we need to understand, like, I totally understand that with my kids. Like, yeah, who wants to be in school all day and then come right home and do work? So the first thing I would look at with that one, Heather, is what's the routine here and why isn't it working? So if the kids are repeatedly going against the rules, I would look at the rules first and go, wow, I wonder if the structure around homework could be a little bit more helpful to the kids being willing to do it. So in this case, because your kids are older, I would sit down and go, you know, guys, I realize I've had this thing where you come home and you do your homework and then you can watch TV. And I see it's not working because you come home and you watch TV and you don't do your homework.
Right.
So what would be a solution? Like, what do you see as the solution or the right way to go about this? Mm-hmm. And talk to them. You know, some kids will try to negotiate maybe half an hour of some downtime when they get home, have a snack, watch a little TV or play games or whatever it is they're doing. And then there's, you know, a set time to do homework. I know my son, he was the only one who did this. I have three kids. My daughters didn't do this, but when I had this conversation with him in middle school, he didn't want to do any homework after school. Like, he was done. Yeah. Like, I don't want to, he would get up at 5:30 in the morning and he did all of his homework in the morning. Cause he was a morning kid, and that's what worked for him. It didn't work for the other ones, but it worked for him. And so,
okay,
enlisting your kids into this conversation is huge, and especially with teenagers. And anytime I hear a parent say, like, this isn't working, the first thing I'm going to ask is, what's your structure? What's your routine? And, you know, I want to hear, like, they're supposed to come home and they have a half an hour to get a snack and blah, blah, blah. And then at 4 o'clock, they've got to be on their homework until it's done, or for 2 hours, or, you know, like that there's this really, really concrete structure that kids can follow and be successful. And once you have that conversation with them, have them putting in writing, like get it into contract form, have it be written out, and then stick it on the refrigerator. So the next time you're having that issue, instead of saying, hey, you know, blah, 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 you're doing this, you're not doing that, you go, what is the agreement? Like, mm-hmm. what did you agree to do? Refer back to the contract that's on the refrigerator. So you're not being the bad guy. Their agreement is what's going to be disciplining them. And when you have two kids and you can do these kind of things like in tandem, you often get the two kids working together to get the things done, because oftentimes what they want to have happen doesn't happen until they're both completed with whatever their jobs or the structure, you know, however this was set up.
Right. I think for kids, you're right. They get home from school. They've been in school like 7 or 8 hours. They're tired. They want to come home and just have some downtime. But then if I give it to them, then I feel like they're not going to do what I want them to do. Right. This has happened to me several times before, where we've gone and got the treat before they did the thing, and then they never did the thing, you know?
Right.
And you want to have your kids relax and rest. It's just, there's so much demand on them too, you know, with homework, and this has to be done at a certain time. And, you know, it's just hard as a parent.
It is.
I would rather homeschool and not worry about homework or any of that. And they did not want to do that. So I was like, okay, this is what you have to do then. This is school. So this is where we're at. And I think
there's a lot of things that can go into this, like giving them responsibility for their schoolwork. So I would love to hear the shift in, this is their work and their responsibility. And it's, you know, it's not that I'm making them do this.
Right.
You know, your work, your job is to do your schoolwork. How are you going to make that happen? It's not, I'm making you do your work. Right. Mm. And just that shift in like the pronouns and the way we're going about it. And this is even something as simple as getting up in the morning. There's so many parents that I have that come to me who are still dragging their kids out of bed, like at junior high. And it's like, no, they need to be getting up and getting ready. My kids used to get up and be dragging me out the door, like, hurry up, we've got to go, I'm going to be late, because I made them in charge of owning getting to school on time. So it wasn't my responsibility, it was theirs to be on time. So there are ways to go about doing that so that you can give that responsibility over, which you really want to do when they're teenagers. You want to teach them how to be responsible for their lives. You don't want to be you know, call him up at college and get him out of bed, right?
Right. Yeah. And then the natural consequence just follows with whatever they decide to do. And that's kind of nice because you don't have to be the punisher. It's just the consequence that's the punisher, right?
Yes.
And that's what we want for our kids, is to learn how to follow these routines on their own so they can be like awesome citizens and in their community and people who can get to a job on time, like you said, and all that amazing, wonderful stuff, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Well, let's head over to another question then here. What can a parent do when their child is destructive or hurtful? So there's corporal punishment that some people do, right? But then what can we do positively when something is being destroyed?
So, and that, it's such a good point, because when they're destructive or hurtful, that's a mistaken goal that we call revenge. So when a child is behaving in that manner, what we know is inside that child feels powerless or not valuable or not loved, and they're hurting the people around them the way they feel hurt. So they're like, I'm going to hurt everybody around me and show you all how hurt I am inside. Mm-hmm. So we have to understand that when a child's behaving that way inside, they're having not good feelings. Just like with the child that's power struggling inside, they feel powerless. So they're trying to boss everybody else around because they don't feel powerful inside. So the child that's being hurtful or hateful is feeling like, I'm so hurt, and I'm just going to hurt everybody around me. So I'm going to take everybody down with me. So the first thing with these, and nobody wants to hear this, that this is the only way out, is to refrain from punishing. Stop punishing. Stop hurting them back. Because that's what's perpetuating the cycle of, you know, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, and I don't care anyway, so I'm just going to be hurting everybody else. And so to kind of refrain from, hold back from discipline. I'm saying refrain, postpone. I'm not saying don't discipline. It's just like in this moment, trying to implement structure and discipline when the relationship is damaged, which is what has happened. When a child's being hurtful and hateful, their perception is this relationship is not nurturing me. It's not taking care of me. I'm not loved. I'm not cared for. Nobody gets me. So we need to reestablish that connection first before we can implement proper discipline. And so to just hold back, just know we can come and address it later. And then the first thing is to say, ouch, because they're saying you're doing something hurtful. Like, this is the child who says, I hate you, right? And just go, ow, ow, that hurts. Mm-hmm. And what that's doing is mirroring the impact that child's having on their world. So they don't often get it, but ouch is universal child language for that hurts. And so to use it when it's an emotional hurt rather than a physical hurt is really interesting. You should see the result. It has a child stop and think and go, what?
She said, I'm going to do that. Yeah, that's a really good idea.
but it usually stops the snowball that's happening. And then I always look for, what have I done? Because most of the time when a child drops and, you know, I hate you, or, you know, or does something super destructive, there's usually something that led to it. Like, it doesn't typically happen out of thin air. And when a parent thinks it does, I always say, I want you to go back and really track over the last day or days or weeks of this child's life, because it rarely, and I would almost say never, happens in a vacuum, like where nothing else has happened. So I look and go, you know, have I been not paying enough attention to this child? Have I been too busy? Have I been working too much? Have I not been listening enough? Have I dismissed something that they've been approaching me with a few times where I just haven't wanted to deal with it? Like, I really look and see, what have I done? And often in the moment, even where this thing escalated, I probably yelled at them. Like, it almost always takes me yelling at my kid before they say or do something super mean and hateful. And so if I've done that in the process, it doesn't matter who started it. And in fact, as the adult, I'm the one who needs to finish it. And so if I have yelled or done anything in the process, I'll say, ouch, that hurts. And I'll say, oh, I realized I was yelling at you, and I apologize for yelling at you.
Yeah.
And I just stop at that point.
Yeah. That's so important. Deep breath. Forgiveness right away too. I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? You know, I didn't mean to.
And most of them will drop right in there. Now, some of them won't. If this is an ongoing, some kind of a battle that's been happening, and, you know, there's something going on, they might just, you know, still climb up and still be mean and angry, but they'll soften. The tone will drop. You know, the amount of energy behind their hurt feelings will slow down. And that's where you have some time to spend, to let things go, to look at the child and acknowledge, you looks like you're really hurting. Tell me what's going on, you know, if you want. And to reestablish the connection. So once you're back in a much better place, you can gently circle around. Now, you know, it wasn't okay when you called me or whatever, or, you know, it wasn't okay when you slammed the door, you know, What would you like to do about that? And elicit their participation in doing a makeup. You know, what kind of a makeup would you like to do for that? If you feel it's appropriate. Most of the time, this kind of a resolution of a hateful child behavior, the parent feels good enough just to know what was going on behind the scenes and to understand their child, that they don't even often feel like the child needs to do a makeup. They usually already have. They've either apologized themselves or they've said or done something that the parent knows they felt remorseful and they didn't mean it.
Yeah. Every child kind of expresses their apology in different ways. I found that if I just let my son have some time, he comes out a little while later and he's like, I'm sorry. You know, like he's thought about it. He just needs that quiet time for a second. And then I realized I don't spend enough time like in a child phase. I'm in the parent ego state a lot where I'm just kind of like being the parent. And I need to go more to a child state where I'm more playful with my kids and just light and fun instead of such a parent. Dishes have to be done. We got to cook right now. It's dinner, you know, instead of thinking about all that as a parent. Because we do have a lot going, don't we? we have to step back, I feel like, and get on their level and just be playful and just be fun. When they see us like that, I think they take it more as they can open up to us more and be more themselves around us instead of have to be so rigid. What do you think?
Yes, I know. And you will win their cooperation. So
yeah,
I always say, especially I'm talking to moms here. I don't know if that's mostly your audience, but yes. Moms especially have this mom face. Like we walk around all day with this scowl on our face. Like, I hate my life. I hate everybody. Like, and then like one of our friends will walk in their door or their husband will walk in the door and our whole face lights up like, oh, we're so glad to see you.
Right?
Kids never get our joy and our fun, just what you were talking about. And We can win so much cooperation by just smiling at them and just loving our moments with them and enjoying their company. And like you said, being playful, like let's get to make some kind of a playful way to get this mucky job done that we have to do instead of being such a drag. Like, let's all do it together and we'll have fun. And to just connect with them on that level, they're willing to do so much for us. They want to make us proud. They want to help us. And especially teenagers, they're like so capable of doing so much more than we are. If we're exhausted because we're doing everything for them, we're doing it wrong because They have way more energy and they're more capable than we are.
Yeah. Another thing I've been doing is these 8-second hugs when they walk from school, you know, the 8-second hug. Sometimes, you know, the teenager doesn't want to, he's just like grumpy, but you know, I can pull him in a little bit and just tell him I love him. And I think they need to be touched too. And they need to feel that affection because we don't, as they grow up, we kind of stop being more affectionate that way. But I was reading this study about how foster kids would do so much better when they were getting just touched several times a day. Like, you know, not weird, but just patting them on the back or the head or just putting your arm around them. And you know, it means a lot to kids to have that connection to the physical connection.
It's necessary. And it's part of how their brain development works. So from birth, being held, being touched is how our brain connections happen. Attachment disorders happen when children are not held or touched or touched not appropriately. So that is so important. And it goes all through life. I mean, all of us need to be touched, but yes, what you're saying. And I mean, I think that's a great, great goal to give yourself, to give 8-second hugs, whether they want it or not.
Hey, they had a hard day. You know, they've had a long day in school. They might just need a little bit of love right then, you know? So I always try to just show them that I'm here for them that way. I love that. I've set this kind of goal for myself that if I was going to be a working mom, and I am, I was going to do that from home somehow so that I could be here when they walked in the door. I never had that as a child growing up. My parents both had to work outside the home. And I feel like that affected me so much as a child, not having a parent in the home. We got in a lot of trouble. We did a lot of things that we probably shouldn't have done. And so I felt like I need to be home in the home if I can, as much as I can. What do you say to parents who have to maybe work outside the home? They don't have that opportunity to be home with their kids.
Well, I think what you want to do is make the best of the time you do have, obviously. Yeah. I mean, that's to me the most important thing, because how sad is it? And so many people come to my classes because the moments I have are miserable. Like we all get home and everybody's fighting and nobody does what they're supposed to do. And I'm just like, I don't even want to be here. And so that's not the way we want to be. So I think there's an argument for people like to say there's quality over quantity, which there is a certain point to that. There's also an argument for having the quantity of time like you've chosen to. And I know I did the same thing when I started this business. I said, God, just give me work that I love that makes a difference in the world and lets me be home after school for my kids.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that's how I got parenting classes, right?
Yeah. You kind of dive into this love and passion that you have and you create something around that. And I love that you've done that. Yeah. So that's awesome. Is there anything as we kind of close up today that you would want my listeners to know about that you do or special, like when they come to work with you, what's it like?
Well, I think the most important thing not that they went for when they come to work with me, but the most important thing to think about, I think, is looking at your child and just seeing the world through their eyes at least once a day. Like once a day, when your child says, you know, mom, 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 or dad, 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 just stop and listen and observe and see the world through their eyes for a moment. If you do that just one time a day, you'll make such a better connection with your child to just spend that moment to just really be listening instead of always telling, teaching, doing all the busy things that we're constantly doing. And, you know, I think today we've touched on a lot of ways to be in communication and sensitive to children, teenagers, you know, to what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what they're saying. And so that's what I would want to say to parents is just to make sure you're stopping and making that connection. Make sure you're stopping. And like what you said, I mean, to me, to have a true communication, I want to get on their level. I want to touch them, put a hand on their shoulder, stroke their hair, you know, whatever it is, put a hand on their back and look in their eyes. Mm-hmm. So three prongs to me that make a connection. And then if I need to have something to say it at that point, but not just be, you know, yelling around the house or, hey, you, or, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So to really make a good connection with your child.
Do all of that. Okay. So let our listeners know where they can find you if they want to come and maybe work with you and learn more about parenting and how they can become a better parent.
Yes. Positiveparenting.com is my website.
Oh, that's so easy. You got that.
I know. It's so easy.
Got that URL, huh?
1995. I said
that. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That I would think that would have been gone long before, but you got that. Positiveparenting.com.
That's right. Right. Positiveparenting.com. And I do, I have a self-directed class that you can get where you listen to the lessons. And then occasionally we'll do Q&A, group Q&A calls along with that. I'm also starting a teenage class in October. So that's not up on the website yet, but it's being worked on right now. It'll be up by the end of the week. And I do random things on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. So I have pages over there too. You can get all those links from the website.
From the website at positiveparenting.com. And would you say the main thing you teach is connection with parents and kids?
Well, I mean, essentially what I teach is like an attachment-based parenting class. Like forming positive attachment is so important with kids. And while the class isn't overtly that, it's definitely all the communication. And one time I got trained in an attachment based curriculum and I was like, oh, I already teach all this stuff, but in a more practical way. Like that was a therapeutic class and I'm just doing, this is for everybody and anybody. This is just good communication skills and tools that nobody taught us. Most of the things in my parenting class, it's like, oh, duh.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's awesome. Cause I know my listeners are going to go, well, I want a little bit more. So where do I find her? So, okay. Well, thank you so much, Debbie, for being on the podcast today. Really appreciate your time.
And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It was an honor.
Oh, I love getting to know new people and what they do and how they can serve my audience better too. So I appreciate you and we'll see you, hopefully have you on maybe another time. Thanks so much. Hey, if you enjoyed this podcast, you have to come check out my coaching and all I have to offer. Whether you're trying to lose weight, get the kids healthier, overcome hard challenges in your life, or just need some support, I'd be so excited to be your coach. I'm going to help you take all this material I teach here on the podcast and apply it to your personal life. So come on over to healthcoachheather.com to learn more. And thanks for sharing this podcast episode with a friend.